What do lay people owe their pastors? I've written an article in the latest issues, etc. journal titled, What Hearers Owe Their Pastors, Receive the Gift, and you can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Jim Pierce's journey from Pentecostalism, fundamentalism, and atheism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues, etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
I guess my first one was when I was 3, I sang Twinkle Twinkle Little Star in front of my entire church.
First time I ever sang in front of anybody was church as well. I think I was 8 years old, and I had a solo at this big church, about 2 or 3,000 people.
My first time singing, I was 5, and it was at a church that me and my mom visited.
The spirit just moved throughout the place. I was like, okay. You know, I didn't realize how much power music had.
The voices of 4 of the finalists for the popular television singing competition, American Idol. And those 4 finalists talking about beginning their public singing careers in church. Now, that's not unusual for a lot of people. The first time they sing in front of someone else is in church, and it doesn't necessarily lead to great success or even a place on television competing with others who started in church as well. But what is the role of music in the church, and can church be one of the laboratories for the arts, but in particular for the musical arts? Not just singing, but of course music covers all kinds of things. We're going to be talking about that with Cantor Philip Magnus. He's cantor at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, and he's a business manager for Liturgy Solutions. Philip, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Oh, thank you, Todd.
Does this encourage you to see, at least in this case, 4 of the final contestants saying, I started singing in church?
Yes, I think it is. God always gives us opportunities in every age, and as much fodder as there is for comments on the culture war, one of the things that we certainly can take encouragement with is that the human voice is very much appreciated, and by young adults. And even though so much of the music has been taken over with electronics, synthesizers, electronic drums, and perhaps the increasing technology behind popular music has taken so much of the human element out, that now that people really, you know, need this human voice to override that. And so we have this huge passion out there and interest in cultivating singing, and I think that's an opportunity for the church.
Let's talk about children singing in church, because all of them mentioned that they had started as children in church, and it's sad to see that sometimes church music gets ceded to the professionals, children not being included. Talk about your concerns there, if you would, Cantor.
Well, sure. I think there is a tension between the salutary use of music as a proclamation, which is a really key part of the role of music in church, and so a desire to have it proclaimed well. Just as you want the Word of God read well, you want the Word of God sung well. There's a tension between that and then nurturing the talents within the congregation for singing the Lord's song. And the tension can be resolved, but it certainly is there. And the key is then to find things that people can sing well, whether it's your adult choir or your children or even the willing soloist. Certainly, you know, the singers on American Idol were set up for success because they were given things that they could sing and could sing well at a young age.
Then let's talk about the role of singing as opposed to the other instrumentation that obviously has found its way into to benefit the music of the church. Why is the human voice essential in the church?
Well, singing carries text, and so therefore you have that's where the meaning is found. At best, instrumental music can recall to the mind texts that are sung, or maybe create some natural effects that help with word painting, you know, waterfall evoking water or baptism. So there's also the associative idea with music. imitating various sounds that can therefore evoke ideas. But to really communicate complex thought, you need language, and so the human voice is going to do that. But I think also at a more fundamental level, the human voice is the instrument that God has given all of us. And when you look in the Psalms, you will find, I did a count once, and it was almost 100. I forget if it was 96 or 98, but almost 100 calls on the people of God to sing God's praises, to tell the story of his love. We don't get our doctrine from descriptive passages. We get them from prescriptive passages, and that's the word I was thinking about. Almost 100 prescriptions telling the people of God to sing the story of his love, to tell of his wondrous works, and to sing his praises. You know, on a broader human level, even in the secular world, as wonderful as instrumental music is, a love song is just not going to have the kind of power and passion without the text actually delivering that message.
There's a long history of our children being introduced first to music in church, and then some of the greatest musicians in the world, not just American Idol candidates, but some of the greatest musicians in the world spent their life in the laboratory of the church with regard to their music. Talk about that, if you would, Philip.
Well, in different ages and in different faith traditions, the art of music has been embraced. There are really three schools of thought that have gone through the church really since the first centuries, where you have some of the Desert Fathers keeping a long distance from music, St. Ambrose embracing music, Augustine taking a middle position, and you really find the same thing today. And Lutherans have always been in the camp of embracing the art of music, but so have other faith traditions within Christianity. And where the art of music is embraced, where the value of music to magnify the gospel and to adorn the sacraments is made great use of, then musicians have found a place in the church and been able to pursue music at a very high level, whether it be the great Lutheran cantors such as Bach and Schütz and Telemann, or singers throughout the age. In the United States, many Lutherans, especially our German Lutherans, being immigrants, farmers, tradesmen, our churches really looked at music as a luxury, and it was more connected with day schools and as part of education. And so we don't have as deep of that heritage in the United States, but certainly in the past 50 years we've been reclaiming that. There's certainly also other wonderful traditions as well. One of my favorite things that I like to see, or that I enjoy as part of music, the art of music within the broader Christian church, is the wonderful boy choir programs they have in England, and hearing the choir of men and boys at Cambridge every year at the service of lessons and carols.
Finally, then, how can we encourage, what can we best do on Sunday morning to encourage not only children to sing, but even to take a place there as where they might foster this musical talent? With about a minute here, Philip.
Oh, boy. Yeah, 1 minute for this, and this is where it all really comes home. Well, what we have, often is this idea that music is some kind of gift that people have, and, oh, we just have to find person X, Y, and Z, and somehow we just unleash this, and all this great music comes forward. And that's really not how it is. Just like poetry or writing or speaking or mathematics, God gives talents, and the talents need to be nurtured and developed. And without cantors and without educators and without a level of teachers in the church to nurture and to summon and to evoke and lead the whole people of God in singing, you're simply not going to have the kind of environment that's going to bring forth a lot of quality music. I realize my minute is up. I guess the thought that I would have is something that Jacques Barzan, the great historian, noted about the Renaissance, and particularly in Venice. He said, there's genius in every age and genius in every place and lots of talent everywhere, but a lot of it, it doesn't get developed, though, unless it comes together. And what you see in different places in history is where, whether you're dealing with art, or whether you're dealing with chemistry, or whether you're dealing with music, is where a lot of emphasis is put on developing something, and then the people come together and the ideas sharpen each other. The iron sharpens iron and things develop. And that's really what we need as a church body to cultivate. When we create that kind of atmosphere and we devote those kind of resources, and then you will have in individual congregations the singer with the violinist and with the church choir, and it's these sorts of things that build upon each other and then develop the talents that God has given us.
Philip Magnus is cantor at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, business officer with Liturgy Solutions. You can find out more about Liturgy Solutions at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Philip, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll look forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary, with Pastor David Peterson, and we'll talk with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer about Christ in Jeremiah chapter 31, the New Covenant. Well, speaking of children, what a better resource for teaching them some of the best texts there are, Luther's Small Catechism, in giant post-reform. That's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. It comes from Concordia Publishing House, and it is a giant poster of the Small Catechism. All of the texts are right there for teaching in your home, in your school, in your church. Find out more at our website, issuesetc.org, or give them a call, 1-800-325-3040. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
We're going to take a look at the ecclesiastical model employed by much of American evangelicalism today, especially as put forward by the seeker-driven movement.
Chris Roseborough talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We're going to take a look at where this idea of a vision-casting leader comes from, what its main tenets are, and we're going to compare that so-called ecclesiastical office to the biblical office of pastor, to see if the two are actually synonymous and interchangeable, or if this concept of a vision-casting leader actually turns a pastor into a false prophet.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough making the case against vision-casting leaders in the church June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.